Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown.
Where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and a culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
The tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 32 of the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom along with the entire crew, and it's our pleasure to present the new show.
We're doing something a little different this time, and we're focusing primarily on two guests, Lauren Robert and Jeff Stant.
Jeff Stant is the executive director of the Indiana Forest Alliance, and in two of our segments, he'll be outlining the consequences of the Indiana Department of Natural Resources' new forest plan, and he will be describing the IFA's proposed legislation, Wild Indiana.
Lauren Robert is well known in our neck of the woods. She's not only a fantastic performer, songwriter, and terrific singer, she has a great story to tell, and we're delighted to share it with you.
The Brown County Hour wouldn't be complete without some poetry, and we have two of our favorites, Tramp Star and Chris Curtin. We also have another essay from Dave Seastrom.
Sometimes a piece is so timely, it's worth hearing again. In a first for us, we'll listen one more time to Rick Fettig's take on life and local politics.
So kick back and set a spell while we bring you episode 32 of the Brown County Hour.
We begin with the first portion of our interviews with Lauren Robert and Jeff Stant.
We also have an encore performance by Rick Fettig.
This evening we have with us singer, songwriter, playwright, actress, and dynamite performer, Lauren Robert. Hi, Lauren. It sure is good to see you again.
It's great to see you and to be here with you.
Well, welcome to our studio.
Thank you.
I hardly know where to begin. I mean, you're a person that's done absolutely everything. Let's do a little bio to start off with.
Sure.
Why don't you tell us your story?
Let's see. I've been an actor since I was very, very young. I mean, young. I tried to go to straight college in Cambridge, but I quit college and immediately auditioned for acting school in New York, the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. That was a two-year program that you had to prove yourself to get into that second year. And I graduated from that and got an agent right out of the academy. So I was an actress for many, many years, but I also have been singing since I was probably 10, and I used to play folk music and do the guitar. I grew up south of Boston in Sharon, Mass. But then I took my singing to New York, and that's where I started getting involved in black gospel and R&B bands. And for some reason, I just had a big voice and kind of a soulful approach to singing, and so I had a great run of a lot of killer soul bands, and so I was doing that as well in New York. Lots of things happened in those two directions, both with wild auditions and acting opportunities, and also I got picked up by Epic Records at the time that Madonna was getting very famous, and her producer heard me at a rehearsal studio and signed me to do some tunes for Epic Records. I also, after that, I was picked up by the prize fighter, Joe Frazier, and he wanted to be a singer even more than he was a fighter, which people don't know. And he didn't have a good voice, but he had enough money to put together this 18-piece incredible band, and I was his lead woman, and I toured with Joe Frazier for years. It was called the Joe Frazier Las Vegas Review.
Mercy.
And I used to die with embarrassment when he would introduce me to the audiences. He would say, "And ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce my white sugar, my girl," and he'd always make these bosom gestures with his hands.
I'm so surprised.
And I would have to come out proudly. I don't know, I'm getting into the details of that, but you can imagine that's only one of a million stories. So I've been doing this a long time. And then I became a playwright years ago, and I had great, great luck with my first play, a play with music called Making It. And it got produced in Bloomington, actually, at the John Waldron Arts Center, with great, great support from the community, including people like Pam Rader, who has supported the arts and supported me so much. And then I wrote another play that I won the Eugene O'Neill Development Award from. Wow. That. That got picked up and produced in New York as an off-Broadway run. So it's been a wild, and that's just a little piece of it.
Oh, mercy. Well, I know that you've spent a lifetime and finding amazing success and near stardom.
And near is the word,
yes,
Dave.
Yes, that's showbiz, though, huh?
Well, remember in the past when they used to have an it girl?
Okay. Like
in the, I was the almost girl.
Oh, my.
Because I would nail these Broadway auditions. My agent would give me a call saying, honey, it's you, it's you. And the next day, one of the money people or something from the show would pick their cousin or their daughter. It was always down to me and somebody.
And yet, you kept coming back for more.
You bet, because this is really what I was born to do.
In fact, you're still in it.
I am. I'm very much in it. And even though I left New York and came back here, I'm playing with fabulous, fabulous guys who were in Mojo Hand years ago. And we call ourselves Soul Medicine. Killer guys. It's a really great rockin' R&B again band. And I do voiceovers still.
Okay.
And I do all of that stuff. Still.
Well, most recently, you were involved in a playwriting project in New York City. Would you like to share some of that?
I think that was the thing that won the O'Neill, a play called 22 Caliber Mouth.
This was the 8 years most recently you spent in New York, is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's actually kind of what also brought me back to New York, was the success of this play and the development of it. And again, everybody thought it was going to go to Broadway. But it ended up in the current flavor of Broadway, it was too dark. I write really dark, dark plays. And so I was not willing to change the ending, and people didn't think they'd make money on a dark play anymore.
What can you say about that?
Well, you just go back to Brown County and play with the dogs.
I know that you have just returned to Brown County, and we're very glad to welcome you back home.
Thank you.
And what a change from New York City. I mean, we are a little more low-key here.
Oh, but such a welcome change. You're low-key, but you're decent folk. You're kind and you're warm and you're interested still in art and life and the quality of living and the flavor of day-to-day in ways that are lost in the cities now.
Mm.
Really lost. It's a joy to be around.
Well, welcome home.
Thank you, babe. Thank you.
First up, we have a song called Bad for Danny. So what's the story behind this song?
I've noticed people who listen to this don't quite get it. I think I was too subtle on this, but it's about a woman who lost her husband, and she's got it bad for Danny. And so the song is about adjusting to losing your lover after so many years.
Coffee. She'll be the only one drinking. Butters his toast, unfolds his newspaper. Thank you.
This evening, it's our pleasure to have Jeff Stant with us, who is the Executive Director of the Indiana Forest Alliance. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Many exciting things are happening within your organization. Would you like to share some of that with us?
We've been very involved in a running debate with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources over the management of our state forests. And
this would be the new plan.
Yes, a new plan that has authorized an unprecedented level of logging. Never before in the history of our state forests, in the more than 100-year history, have we ever seen as much logging as has been occurring for the past 4 years in the state forests. A ramping up to a level that's 1,000% higher than it was a decade ago, and that essentially was at for many decades.
Why is that? Why would they do this?
Part of it is, I think, the philosophy of the Daniels administration was we want different divisions of state government to be self-funding. The state forests were seen as a resource that can produce money through saw timber. And they went from producing and budgeting to produce around $500,000 a year, $300,000 to $500,000 a year from logging back in the days before the Daniels administration up to 2004, to proposing in the first biennial budget of the Daniels administration that amount of money increased to more than $3 million a year that they wanted to have coming in from the state forests, from timber sales. So that's part of it. And another part of it is whoever runs the Division of Forestry in Indiana is called the state forester. And for a long time, our state foresters were conservative foresters. The forestry on the state forest reflected that. A single tree selection of very large or diseased trees, but very low levels of timbering. And you hardly would know when you drove through Yellowwood that they were timbering. That all changed with the new forester that Governor Daniels brought in, a man named John Seifert, who came from the forest products industry and was a timber owner and a silviculturalist. And he views all forests, whether they're public forests or private forests, as a agriculture exercise. Yeah, something to be harvested, as though it's immoral not to be harvesting trees. Mm-hmm. So he sees the entire state forest acreages as a resource for Hoosiers to be making money from. And we think in the process what he's doing is destroying what makes the state forests special. We're very concerned about that, and we have proposed for several legislative cycles now legislation to protect areas such as the Backcountry area and Morgan Monroe State Forest, that also is in part of Yellowwood State Forest, legislation to stop logging or prevent logging or road building into those areas. When they were established, the idea was to set them aside for wilderness recreation and only do logging to keep trails open, or if there were diseased trees that posed a hazard or something, to to remove them, not to use them as part of the commercial timber base for the state forest. That all changed under John Seifert, and so we have been proposing legislation that would statutorily set them aside, say to the Division of Forestry, you can't log there. And we haven't been having any luck with that. So under Governor Daniels, he hires Seifert, who wants to log everywhere in the state forest. Then under Governor Pence, he continues, he rehires Seifert to continue as a forester. And so we've had this level of logging that's never occurred before. In the four previous governors, they never cut like this. The constituents of legislators whose districts include these state forests ask their legislators to take action to do so, to introduce legislation and push for its passage that would set these areas aside from logging and road building by statute, can limit the authority of the DNR to log in these areas. You can actually prohibit it in various areas, but you have to do it by changing the law. You can't do it by an act of the governor. So the key here is to get many constituents as possible who are concerned about the amount of logging going on in Yellowwood State Forest and Morgan Monroe State Forest. People are concerned about that. They've got to talk to their legislator. It's Republican governors who've put this policy of increased timbering in place, but actually it was the Republicans who set aside the backcountry areas to begin with in the 1970s. Right. Otis Bowen and Robert Orr did that. And the Democrats continued that policy and then added another policy onto it called old forests. They were letting them go back into being what's called old growth forests, similar to what a virgin forest is. It's after people haven't touched it long enough, it goes back to its virgin quality. They were letting that happen. And both of those programs were essentially nullified when Governor Daniels came in, and then Governor Pence continued his policy. We can change that if we get Republicans to talk to the governor, who are in the legislature, and you have two of them here. Essentially, the entire state forest system will have some kind of entry into every single tract and compartment within a tract, and they will enter every single one of those tracts and compartments into some kind of logging in the next 10 to 12 years. Because they're not just doing what silviculture demand. Every state forest, all the foresters who work for it now, have to produce a quota to generate a certain amount of revenue. And so that's requiring them to go into the entire forest system, except for 1.5%. All of the state forest, such a small amount of the state forest, most of it's all going to be open to logging, as I'm saying, in the next 10 to 12 years under the current plan.
Hello, this is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour and WFHB, and I'm here at the Brown County Fair. We're having a good old time, and over here they expect the politicians to all spend a certain amount of time here, so I've run across one right now, Mr. Tim White. Hello, Tim. How you doing?
How you doing, Rick? Nice to see you. You having a good time?
Yeah, I am. It's a great time.
Food's great, isn't it?
So tell us what it is you're running for.
I'll be running for mayor of Nashville this year, and hope to get all the votes I can. That's why I'm out here. Got to meet a lot of people.
Mayor, aren't we a town and have a town council?
Well, we do, but I've got a vision this year. I think it's going to kind of go over the top. And
you're going to bump things up a notch, huh?
We've got to do a little bit of bumping.
Well, that's good to see. Hey, there's one thing that's been troubling me. I keep hearing about it, and I just can't figure it out for the life of me. So I've been hearing a lot about this some-sex marriage.
Some-sex marriage.
Yeah, some-sex. It sounds familiar.
But
yeah, it sounds like one side doesn't like some sex, so I guess they don't like sex. And the other guys say that some sex is okay, so I guess they're all right with it. But, I mean, I thought that's the reason you got married was to have some sex.
Well, that's kind of my beliefs, too.
Yeah.
But I
heard that there was one group that went so far as to say that you couldn't have sex standing up. Have you ever heard anything like that?
You couldn't have sex standing up. Never heard of that.
Yeah, no, they was afraid you'd start dancing. Afraid it might lead to dancing.
Rick, are you sure you're not talking about same sex?
Same sex?
Yeah.
What do you mean, same sex?
Same sex marriage. I think you're a little confused on it.
Same sex? You mean we have to have it the same way every time? Well, who'd want to do that?
Boy, you're getting really personal
here. You're not.
I think this might come up with some of my voters. And
you're not really saying that everybody has to do it the same way all the time, are you? It's not like a national issue?
That's just between me and you, I would hope not. But
Well, if you learn any more about it, let me know.
I'll get back. Can I get back with you on that?
Yeah.
I'll get my people to get
back
with you.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
All right.
Congratulations.
You have a good time. All right.
I guess we'll have to write you in on that ballot, won't we?
All right. We'll see you at the voter's box.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Now we pause for station identification.
Feel nurtured and encouraged as you begin or continue your yoga practice. Riverlight Yoga is Nashville, Indiana's only dedicated yoga space committed to your personal growth and healthy yoga practice. See riverlightyoga.com for full details.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio WFHB at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Welcome back to episode 32 of the Brown County Hour.
Tramp Star begins this portion of the show with his poem, Doc Cutter.
We have more of our interview with Lauren Robert, and Jeff Stant outlines the IFA's proposed forest plan, Wild Indiana.
Old Doc Cutter. He died worth a horse and buggy, not fit for very much. And suit of salt and pepper clothes that smelled of drugs and such. Shelf of old fat-bellied bottles and row of battered books. And satchel that was old as him, or older from its looks. He died worth $100 or some such small amount, with 50,000 standing out if he had kept a count. Mud-splattered buggy, needin' grease, and him there on the seat, hunched up against the bitter cold or frying in the heat. Tin lantern dangling from the dash, reins hanging loose and slack, or slapping up and down along his tough old horse's back. Black satchel clamped between his feet, filled up with drugs and pills. That's Doc, a-going on his rounds, a-curing people's ills. Woke up 100 times to hear his buggy creaking by, to help some new soul into life or ease one marked to die. Set up myself a time or two, or rather walk the floor, my time divided twixt the bed and looking out the door, fretting and a-worrying and studying the clock, then saying when I heard his rig, thank God, here comes Doc. He didn't have no office hours, always on beck and call, not knowing bed or rest for days or his old horse a stall. Out bucking snowdrifts yesterday and mud hub deep today, or fording creeks when they was up and bridges washed away. Knowed half the time or more than that, he'd never get a cent. But rich or poor or far or near, where sickness was, he went. He died worth $100 or some such small amount, if money is the only thing worth taking in account. But if all the folks that loved him would answer saying aye, they would raise a mighty chorus echoing to the sky, and I think the listening angels, whole bright and shining flock, would lean earthward, smiling, welcome, waiting there for Doc.
And now we're back with Lauren Robert. So, Lauren,
yeah.
All the stuff that you do, what are some of the other things that you do that we don't know about?
Well, at night, I go out into the woods.
I suspected this.
One of the things I do is called performance counseling.
Now, I just love the sound of that.
You're so cute that you like that. Because really, that's what it is. There's so many aspects to performing. And it's not just the literal, how do you breathe and what do you do? There's a whole emotional aspect to performing that people need to work on for their stuff to be authentic and free and to really access your artistic part. You need counsel.
Well, I think we've all seen performers that would definitely benefit from some counseling.
Yes. I do that with people and help them work through the issues that may be holding them back. Something I also do within this performance counseling, I help people who are going to be on the witness stand in court, people who are going to make speeches, or even at work when somebody's going to go and talk to the boss about a raise.
Wow.
I work with people to help them find their courage and their strength to do that.
Your yellow page must be really full.
Well, theoretically, that would be great.
So you mentioned that you're also interested in teaching acting again.
Yes, I used to do it here. I had a wonderful class of some very talented Brown County people. One of them is you.
Uh-oh.
Yes, people have asked me to do it again. And I'm now looking into spaces where I could start to put out the word to put together a group and do some acting teaching. You bet.
I had a blast in your class, and I'm sure there'll be lots of takers.
Oh, it would be wonderful to do it again.
And now we have, and I have to say, this is a very intriguing title, My Body Said Yes.
Well, in my years of experiencing life, I've known a lot of bad boys, a lot of them. And one of the lead lines in the song is, "Everything about you told me no." And it goes on about all the things that I spotted, but my body said yes.
Mm.
So it's a blues song, as you can imagine.
Everything about you told me no.
Something I can't resist.
Let's talk about Wild Indiana.
Right. It's a effort by the Indiana Forest Alliance to go into the most contiguous, deepest, wildest parts of the state forests and delineate on a map the areas that could be set aside for their wilderness characteristics by law, by statute. And we have been inventorying them throughout the summer, and we're using 1,000 acres as a cutoff. Anything below 1,000 acres we're not proposing as a wild area. But if it's 1,000 acres or greater and it doesn't cross a county road, those are two key criteria, then we're looking at that would be part of a state wild area system where we wouldn't log or build roads into these areas in state forests. Well, we've delineated 12 of them in 6 of the state forests. They make up about 35,830 acres, about 23% of all of the state forests. It still leaves more than 3/4 of the state forests open to commercial timbering. But these would protect the deepest, wildest tracks in the state forest for wilderness recreation, for hiking, hunting, mushroom picking, fishing, camping. We're not talking about putting a rope around these areas and saying you can't touch, you can't pick a mushroom, you can't hunt. This is not locking anything up. It's just making public forests that are wild forests available to the public for recreation, and saying we're not going to let the state come in and spoil these areas. They're not going to be logged. They're going to go back to what existed when the pioneers got here. The U.S. Forest Service does these things called timber stand inventories, where they look at the age of all of the forests in the state. And they have found that when you come to southern Indiana, where there are the most forests in the state, in the south central area of the state, that when you are looking at all the forests as a whole, average ages are somewhere between 30 and 70 years old. But then when you focus in on the public forests, all of a sudden the average maximum ages of the forests jump. In other words, we have thousands of acres of state forests that are between 80 years and 100 years old, and that they haven't really had active timber stand improvement on them since they've been put in the state forest system. The state forest people will tell you, no, we've been cutting here all along, we're just continuing what we've always done, and that's just not true. They never logged at the rate they're logging now, yeah, today. That's what's the myth. They keep trying to say that, what are folks upset about? We're just doing what we've always done. No, you're doing something unprecedented in Yellowwood and Morgan Monroe. You're now running, you're cutting more logs, trees down out of those forests than you used to cut down in a year out of the entire state forest system. So it's very different. What we're proposing with these wild areas would be to set aside up in this area, in Brown County and over in Monroe County, about 11,840 acres of the two state forests that collectively are almost 50,000 acres. We're talking about a little more than a fifth in 4 wild areas. One would be the low gap, the other is the Scarcifat, and then when you go south of 46 at Belmont, called Mossop Ridge, and then across Crooked Creek Road, Miller Ridge, when you add the state park to it and the wildlands that are protected in the National Forest Management Plan, known as Panther Creek, to the south of it and going over to Nebo Ridge, that's actually part of the largest wild forest, tract of wild forest, really in the entire lower Midwestern United States. So it's area that has very special qualities. It's unique. You can't find that 15,000 acres like that of unlogged, unroaded forest anywhere in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, anywhere from eastern Pennsylvania all the way out to the plains. It's so close to so many urban areas. And so we'd like to see the state take proactive action to set aside those two backcountry areas south of 46.
Well, this sounds like an amazing opportunity. What can people do if they're interested in this idea? How can they support this, and who should they contact?
They can ask their state legislature to support legislation that would protect these areas as wild areas where there would be no logging or road building into them. It's really important if they live in this area that they contact their legislators. Senator Steele, who represents this area, and Representative Cook, who represents this area. Senator Steele has to face the timber industry, which is opposed to even studying the idea of setting aside these areas of wild forest. A legislator needs to be able to say, my constituents are demanding it. And that doesn't stop from one session to the other if the issue is still there. It's that old adage, the price of democracy is eternal vigilance. It applies here. And the same thing goes for Eric Cook, the representative from this area. Both of those two gentlemen came to a third house in Brown County last year here. That's the sessions that legislators hold with their constituents during the session of the General Assembly to hear how they're feeling. And they heard loud and clear from Brown Countyans that this issue of logging really bothered people here.
The house was packed.
That had a profound effect on them. So they both because the wilderness legislation we had proposed was bottled up in committee, they both proposed study resolutions. The resolutions were blocked when it came time for legislative council to assign a study committee to them. There weren't any other resolutions that had anywhere near the support these did, but they weren't assigned to study committees. So what the legislative leaders told us was, you need to go back to those areas where these wild forests are. And if the constituents, these legislators want them, you need to delineate them on a map and come back to us with legislation with specific proposals to protect specific areas. That's what we're doing with this Wild Indiana campaign and proposing these wild areas. And so if people want to help get those wild areas established, they need to get a hold of Senator Steele and Eric Cook and ask them to introduce legislation to establish a wild area system on the state forests in Indiana and designate these specific 12 areas, including these four I've mentioned here in Brown and Monroe counties: Low Gap, Scarsafat, Mossop Ridge, and Miller Ridge.
As far as contacting the IFA, I assume you have a website.
Yes, we do, www.indianaforestalliance.org. And they're both sympathetic to us. And when people contact them, it's important for them to thank them for having pushed those study resolutions last year and to ask them to keep going and now to sponsor legislation if the leadership of the legislature won't study the issue. That's what people can do. The other thing they could do is let Governor Pence know that they're upset about all this timbering. He, as the chief executive of the state, could stop this overnight if he wanted to. And he needs to hear from people. In my view, probably one of the most important things you could do would be to call his office and insist that you speak to him. The governor visits Brown County on a regular basis and really enjoys his time here. And he needs to hear from Brown Countyans that this level of timbering is entirely inappropriate. And if he hears from enough of them, he might take some action to try to moderate it. The legislation itself will pressure the DNR to change what it's doing. If we can get the legislators to offer it, to sponsor it. First of all, if a Republican in the Senate, Senator Steele, sponsors legislation to establish these state wild areas, Senator Steele is on the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. That's the committee with jurisdiction over natural resource issues. The bill is likely to be heard, and that'll be unprecedented, that we'll actually get the bill heard in the Senate. Just having a hearing on the bill will put pressure on the Pence administration to justify what it's doing, hopefully to moderate what it's doing. People have to realize this is a long process. It takes continual contact, and legislators need to be thanked when they make an effort, even if they run into a stone wall, and encouraged to keep going.
Jeff, thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And this has been Jeff Stanth, the Executive Director of the Indiana Forest Alliance.
Now we pause for station identification.
Feel nurtured and encouraged as you begin or continue your yoga practice. Riverlight Yoga is Nashville, Indiana's only dedicated yoga space committed to your personal growth and healthy yoga practice. See riverlightyoga.com for full details.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio WFHB at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Welcome back to the final segment of episode 32.
We begin this segment with an untitled poem from Chris Curtin, followed by an essay from Dave Seastrom.
And we close the show with the final portion of our interview with Lauren Robert.
This is Chris Curtin with an untitled poem. I have no idea what I'm doing here, nor where I'm going as well, if I'm on my way to someplace else or headed straight for hell. How I came to be here, I really haven't a clue, and I'm completely in the dark on what I'm here to do. And who are all these others around here all the time? Am I a part of their lives, or are they a part of mine? And if I find out where I'm going, how will I know when I arrive? And when I finally get there, will I be dead or alive? And if I'm dead and there a while, will I get to do some things, or just lie there in a pile?
For a lot of folks in the Midwest, fall is the premium time to come to Brown County, and there's a lot to be said for that. It really is absolutely beautiful right now. The air is cool, and the trees are in full color. For those of us who have the privilege to live here, as the saying goes, fall is not all in Brown County. I will admit that this is our showiest season. As long as our beautiful forests remain intact, the hills and valleys will be ablaze in color this time of year. In an older forest like ours, it takes little imagination to picture this landscape before the great clear cut changed the land into a moonscape. Today, we're basking in the beauty of a 100-year recovery, and our forest has almost returned to its former glory. If we just leave it alone, we might only need another 100 years or so, and we'll be back to where we were before settlement. This is one of my favorite times of the year to go hiking, and last Sunday, my wife, Becky, and I did just that. To our west is the largest contiguous state forest in Indiana. There are many miles of older-growth forest land situated on top of some of the prettiest landscape the state has to offer. We set out to find a strata of marine fossils a friend and I discovered a few years ago. When we hike this ridge system, my mind often drifts back to the earlier travelers who shared this path. This particular pathway links with the Tecumseh Trail that runs for miles, arguably in the finest stretch of forest hiking in the state. While I'm not exactly sure Tecumseh ever set foot on this path, it's likely he made his way through here on one of his many missions to bring unity to the American Indians. I have a vision of encountering a small band of Shawnee as they were making their way south. It was a cool fall morning, and while I was out hiking, I found myself surrounded by a thick fog. Disoriented, I decided to sit down and wait for the fog to clear. Suddenly, I was face to face with a group of Shawnee. They moved so quietly, I was completely surprised by their presence. I rose to my feet and held up my right hand in a gesture of peace. I was overwhelmed by their beauty. They were completely fit, and traveling light, they were moving swiftly towards their destination without any sign of fatigue. The party came to a halt as they surrounded me. Just then, Tecumseh stepped forward and asked what I was doing there. When I recovered my wits, I told him I came from 200 years in the future. At that moment, something happened, and I could see the world through Tecumseh's eyes, and he could see the world through mine. Both of us had tears in our eyes, mine from the sight of the forest primordial, and his from the vision of what's been done to this sacred land. I thanked him for the gift of seeing, and he shook his head in sorrow. He asked me, "Why do your people not love the land?" I told him many of our people have forgotten the land is the source of life. They can only see and value money, and there are plenty more of us who simply don't know what we've done. But there are many of us who love the land and see it for its true value, life itself. I went on to say, we have committed a great crime upon the land, and we are working so that our children's children will know the land as your people saw it. I also told them, I will not live to see that day. If we hold on to our dreams, we can plant seeds in the hearts of our people, and someday those seeds will bear fruit. If we abandon our dreams, we can only guarantee further destruction. Tecumseh looked at me for a long time. When he finally spoke, he said, "You have much work to do, my brother. May your heart be strong." Shaking his vision of the future, he turned to his men and gave the command to leave. As swiftly as they came, they disappeared.
Becky and I never found those fossils. I made a wrong turn, and we ran out of time. But you know, it didn't really matter. With every step we took, we were surrounded by the beauty of something you can only find if you're looking. Nature in all of her glory. This story is a product of my imagination. However, as Becky and I continued our walk, I couldn't help but think a forest in its natural state is an ideal place to envision life as it could be. To share a living system that connects each of us to the beginning has no other parallel, and there's no finer place to find it than right here in Brown County. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
And we're back with Lauren Robert. So, Lauren, amongst other things, you've been a policeman.
Yes, I have.
Twice now.
Yes.
And please tell us about this.
That seems strange, I know. But ever since I was very little, I have had a real compulsion to serve. I really believe in service. At first in New York, where when I was there, when I was 18, I worked, of course, on suicide hotlines, and I worked counseling families of homicide victims. And then I realized by being involved with the criminal justice system that I also could probably be a very welcome voice of reason if I also was a cop. So I first moved here to Bloomington and got a job with Monroe County Sheriff's Department. And I did that for a couple of years, and I was a telecom officer, and I also went out on the road at times. When I was a telecom officer, if somebody was having a person enter into their house, it was the middle of the night, and when they called and they got me, and they were terrified, sort of a culmination of all my counseling and my experience in life, I really knew how to talk to them and help calm them down. And I had a lot of compassion and do have a lot of compassion for people who are in crisis. So I'm a first responder, and that was the way for me to do it. Also, as a police officer, well, here's a great example. I was also a cop in New York. When I was a civilian and I would just be sitting on a subway bench and I would see some mother beating up her kid right there. As a civilian, I could not intervene. It was dangerous. I didn't have any authority. But as a police officer, I could now approach that woman and I could try to put a stop to things. So that was very, very empowering in an immediate way. And I kept my compassion as a police officer and wanted to see all sides of everything.
Serve and protect.
Truly, and I really meant it. But I left the job in New York because I found a lot of current young people who are getting into criminal justice do not have that as their MO. I think that growing up on video games and experiencing the thrill of killing and the thrill of seeing heads explode and blood has inured people to the reality of that. So young guys coming up as cops, they want some action. They want there to be a place to wield a lot of that power and have that real high stimulus. And I, too, was in it for not to shoot people, but an adrenaline-addicted person.
I can see that.
And there's no better drama, no more potent drama than out there. People don't have any idea what's happening out there.
Well, in the absolute mystery of every single day.
Yes. Well said. Perfect. Yeah. So it was a thrilling, rewarding job. That I miss.
Yeah. Well, you know, there might be positions available for you here.
I don't think so. I don't think the Brown County criminal justice system would welcome the likes of me.
Well, I certainly would.
Thank you.
And now we have In the Moment.
In the Moment is a ballad from my first play, my musical, Making It. And In the Moment is a woman singing about always the years and years of wanting a career in show business, but she has discovered that she has AIDS. And as she's facing her illness, she realizes that really living in the moment, instead of years and years of wanting and yearning and always reaching for something ahead, that the real key to living is in the moment. Thank you.
I can't hide anymore. Fate has opened the door, and I'm going in. Am I in the moment? Is this moment for me? No distraction will do. The pretending is through. I can't be here. Am I in the moment? Is the moment for me? My embrace of the past, my romance with tomorrow. I was free to ignore all the life of today. But charged with the task of facing up to this sorrow, there's aliveness in me now that I'm so unsure of my state. I've been running so fast, might try walking at last. I will need you to be in the moment. Share this moment with me. I'll do the best that I can. Now the moment's with me. Why face with endings? Do I begin? My heart that was cold starts to hunger. It is right here, and it's now that I'm thinking of. I can't hide anymore. Fate has opened the door, and I'm going in. Yes, I'm in the moment. The moment is.
Let's talk about your new band.
Yeah.
Soul Medicine.
Yeah.
So a lot of these folks were Mojo Hand folks.
Yep. Right? Steve Mascari on bass, Jamie Reed as the drummer, Martin O'Neill from Ireland as the guitar player, and we all played all over the country for years in New Orleans and everywhere. And I actually brought these guys to New York to play with me at the Iridium. Once I got a taste of that again, I had to play more with them. So that was another part of what brought me back here, to play real, real soul music with soulful guys. So we cut a demo, and we played recently at Players. We opened for CJ Chenier, and we're doing a lot of, as I said, soul stuff, R&B stuff, originals. Matt Romy is the keyboard player. I'd love you to play that tune, and it'll give you a real taste of our band.
Hey, I'll show you how.
So give us your contact information. How can we get a hold of you?
Well, I'd love people to old-fashionedly email me. And my, can I give my
email? Yes, please.
My email is Lauren Robert, one word, L-A-U-R-E-N, Robert, with no S, the number 24, at Gmail. LaurenRobert24@gmail.com. I do have a website. Just look me up at LaurenRobert.com. And I think there's a lot of stuff on me there. And I'm on Facebook also.
Lauren, thank you so much for coming in. It was absolutely wonderful to see you again. And we're so glad that you're back in the neighborhood with all your great talent and your music and all the stuff that you're doing.
Dave, I'm truly honored. I thank you for your kindness and for having me here. And those are the kinds of words, just your kindness just then is so inspirational. And I'm very grateful. Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Thanks for listening to episode 32 of the Brown County Hour, recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville. Broadcast the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can stream this or any of our shows from our website, browncountyhour.com. While you're there, check out our Woodwatch page, focused on the situation our forest lands are facing, and where you can access additional information about the new Wild Indiana Plan. This show was produced by Jeff Foster, Pam Rader, Rick Fettig, Vera Grubbs, and Dave Seastrom. And once again, we offer a tip of the hat to Slats Klug for our theme music. You've been listening to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County home.